Midlands today with Tullamore Motors Renault. The Renault Clio is irresistible. Your 231 model is available for order today at tullamoremotors.ie. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
Well, good morning. It's Wednesday already. Hump of the week. How are you? Coming up today, more chances for you to win some bras. Yes, lingerie is our prize, thanks to Goods of Kilkenny. Goods.ie for more details. Just get involved. Be caller of the week on any of these topics, such as how to make your farm or business as sustainable as possible. You'll meet the family with solar panels, beehives, and pigs named Elvis and Boris. Imagine running a marathon and then repeating it 600 times. A local man has done just that. Plus, Mark McSharry has resigned from Fianna Fáil. His readmittance had been proposed by Offaly TD Barry Cowan. What has gone wrong? We'll have the story. When you call 0818 300 103, that's the number. Text or WhatsApp, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore, 083 30 10 103. OK, a little bit of bad news in the newspapers this morning. The expansion of centre parks and the promise of more than 100 new jobs has been put on hold because of various appeals made to onboard Planola. So they were planning to build 198 new lodges, an extra large leisure facility to include saunas and pods and a new lakeside restaurant. You get the idea. Centre parks, they always go lavish and all out. But there are several appeals, one from a group called Sustainability 2050. They suggest it's not a detailed enough application about how they will recover some of the energy used. There's a local PJ Walsh, and PJ suggests the centre parks have not assessed the risk posed by a nearby landfill. And there are various other appeals being made, and on board Planola will have to return to these objectors by March of next year. So the pause button is being pressed on that. Now, elsewhere on the front pages, not necessarily Midlands relevant, but the Irish Times tells you how the Cabinet has been warned about overruns in education spending. €314 million ahead of budget at the end of September. Driven by a couple of things. So the war in Ukraine means there are more children in our classrooms because these refugees have come here. Naturally, the children wish to continue their education and they're being absorbed into mainstream schools. And the other is the increase in construction costs. Construction inflation is at 21% currently, and that has a bearing on the school building projects. So all in all, the department, €314 million over budget. And we'll see what ministers decide. Will they wish to curtail it? Will they be OK with that level of overrun? We will know more later today. The front of the Irish Independent. Ah, this is a lovely photo, actually, of Mrs. Doyle and Father Dougal. The actors Pauline McGlynn and Ardal O'Hanlon from Father Ted are reuniting for a new comedy series, and it'll be called Rosie Malloy Gives Up Everything. And the what's funny here, Mrs. Doyle was so much older than Father Dougal and Father Ted in the series, but in this new programme, their parents, they're playing the part of Rosie's parents. Rosie is the title character, and they're presented as being the same age. Pauline McGlynn, she had a massive amount of makeup on during Father Ted, and it really aged her far beyond her years. The main story, though, on the Irish Independent, safety fears as maternity hospitals cannot fill jobs. And we have this problem right across the health service where there are various vocations and they cannot fill the required number of vacancies, whether it's in speech and language therapists, occupational therapists, but most seriously when it's on the front line. And there are 100 unfilled positions in the National Maternity Hospital. And the effect on patient care is becoming a huge concern to Dr. Mary Brosnan, who is the Director of Nursing and Midwifery in the hospital. And she says, "This is the worst I have seen in my life." And the union, the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation, is calling for more funding to tackle the issue. So you see the financial pressures on both of those front pages, one relating to education, the other relating to health. And then we have the other ways in which your money is being spent on the front of the Irish Daily Star. "No new leash of life for Dowdle" is the headline. This is Jonathan Dowdle, who has been taken into custody at the Portlaoise prison, the top security prison in the country. And of course, the cost of keeping a prisoner there far exceeds any other jail in Ireland. What else is on the front pages before we get to some of the more local stories? The Irish Examiner tells you there are a record number of patients leaving EDs unseen. So you go to the emergency department, you expect to be seen in a timely fashion, and eventually you give up and you leave. And the number of people doing that has exceeded all-time highs. All right, Kelly Harrington is the new lady of boxing. Katie Taylor very much still there, but as a pro. And Kelly Harrington has just released her new book in which she takes a pop at Pete Taylor, Katie's dad, with whom she's been estranged for some years following the breakup of her parents' marriage. But Katie, on this occasion, has come to the defence of Pete. Kelly Harrington alleged that Pete Taylor and the Irish Athletic and Boxing Association held back other women because of Katie. They couldn't see past Katie. But Katie Taylor, in an Instagram post, has defended her dad and says, "In as much as people have given me credit for the inclusion of women's boxing in the Olympics, it would not have happened without my dad tirelessly campaigning outside of the ring. It is as much a part of his legacy as it is mine," which is very generous of her in the circumstances, considering her feelings towards her dad. But anyway, Katie Taylor's, Kelly Harrington's new book is out. It's called Kelly, and it was written with Roddy Doyle. And you often get this when books are released. A little bit of controversy always helps to shift copies. The North and South Koreas are always at each other's throats, and now they're firing missiles in each other's direction, according to the Irish Times. North Korea fired 10 missiles off its eastern and western coasts yesterday morning, to which the South Korean military responded by firing missiles over their maritime border. And this is all just a bit of sabre rattling, hopefully, and it doesn't escalate, but there's always a risk in that part of the world. And then you've got China and Taiwan, and, you know, the world is on a delicate balance sometimes, isn't it? That's in the Irish Times. Have you switched from Ulster Bank or KBC to a different provider? The big divorce is taking place, with so many customers having to find another bank. Bank of Ireland, Permanent TSB, AIB, they will be the main choices, although some are going to Revolut and the online brands as well. But how easy is the process, or how complicated is it? How frustrated have you become? Because a new survey by the Consumer and Competition Protection Commission shows over half of people who had their main account with Ulster Bank or KBC have moved on, but 6 out of 10 have reported challenges when switching. And there are a couple of issues there. One, you've got a huge inertia. A lot of people haven't made the move yet. And trust me, we've had to do this from a business perspective. It's slow, much slower than you would think, to try and get the new bank to respond and to set up all the different things and dot the I's and cross the T's. And it is very frustrating. So do not underestimate the length of time it will take. Do not leave it until the last minute. But the second point, of course, is that if 6 out of 10 people are having difficulty, it suggests the banks really need to get their shop in order. And they probably have little incentive when you've got 2 pillar banks and then just a handful of others. There isn't really enough competition. And this is why the regulator is taking an interest in it. Here's a very uplifting story, I think, if you're somebody who has suffered a disability and you feel you're independence is ebbing away. Mossy Ford from Trim is 73 years of age, and she has spent much of her life living in institutions because she was diagnosed with cerebral palsy as a child. And from the age of 4, she had to live away from her family quite a lot. In 1999, when she was only 50 years of age, she was moved into a nursing home in Kells. And she found it very frustrating because she wanted to contribute. And she asked, for instance, to wash up in the evenings to help out the staff. But as time went on, the creeping influence of health and safety regulations put a stop to all that. So one day, a social worker asked her about independent living. And she said, "Are you mad? I can't walk, I can't cook, I can't manage my money." Anyway, the seed was planted. And so a few years later, she moved into a brand new apartment block in Johnstown near Navan. And there are 90 apartments in this block, and it has its own self-contained supermarket, pharmacy, post office. There's a bus stop right beside it. And it is one of the most discreet independent living facilities for disabled people in the country. And she is now able to manage her money, collect her prescription, take her own medicine, cook her own dinner. She never made a cup of tea until she was 60 years of age. But this collaboration between Enable Ireland, the HSE, and Cheshire, which is the landlord, has just reinvigorated her life. So if we only had more of these independent living complexes, there may be fewer people in nursing homes and they would enjoy a higher level of independence into later life. Anyway, that story is in the Irish Independent and it's well worth a read. Okay, Next, as in Next, the clothing and homeware chain, has said, actually, profit is better than expected. Despite the cost of living crisis, full year sales rose 0.4% in the third quarter, and it's maintaining its full profit forecast. So while you hear much doom and gloom about the economy, some people still have money and some people are still spending. But beware the Christmas turkey. He could be off the menu, because the Irish Independent tells us about a red alert issued by the Irish Farmers Association after a strain of avian flu. You'll have to write this one down. HPA1H5N1. It was discovered by the Department of Agriculture in a lab test on Monday. And the fear is that this may contaminate the poultry supplies in Ireland, and it's expected the Irish Department of Agriculture will issue a directive to take poultry indoors over the next couple of days. That's in the Irish Independent. Now, if you fancy getting a government contract, and who doesn't want a stable source of income, would this tempt you? You could supply cheese for Garda recruits. The Garda College in Temple Moor is seeking a supplier for 13 types of cheese. Did you know there were 13 types of cheese? Anyway, you've got cottage cheese, feta, cheddar, parmesan, blue-veined cheese. Anyway, it goes on and on and on. 13 different types of cheese, and the contract is worth €220,000, and it will run for 48 months. You need to get it in by the start of next month. There is another tender as well for SULLIS. This is the state's further education and training agency. It used to be called FOSS once upon a time. They are looking for a chatbot, but not any ordinary chatbot. This has to be a graceful chatbot. So when you go on the website, you will think you are conversing with a human. And it will give all those basic courtesies and interactions and be available 24 hours a day. Anyway, if you're a software engineer and you fancy a project, that one, it doesn't say how much it's worth, but probably a princely sum. And finally, another tender that is up on the public website is for water. If you can supply water coolers, water bottles, point-of-use coolers, which are off the mains, and if you can service all of these gadgets, collect, transport, sanitise and maintain, then the existing contract is in the region of 6.7 million euro. Can you do better? These are all advertised, and they have to be if they're over a certain value, but you're not just competing with other suppliers in Ireland. It can be tendered for anywhere within the European Union. Two more stories very quickly. Carol Vorderman has shared her best energy-saving hack, and it is very simple. Insulate everything. She says she's a great proponent of insulation, and she has lived in various houses over the years. Remember Carl Vorderman from Countdown Brain Box? Anyway, she insulates walls, floors, ceilings, and it's kind of like a cocoon. But the benefit, she says, is she's not even sure if her heating is on anymore. She barely has a heating bill because she insulates so much. Just watch for the ventilation, then you'll get the condensation, as Brian Clunan will tell you, in DIY in an hour's time. And a final one, and you may have heard this on the 9 o'clock news, Sean's Bar, even more famous now after appearing on The Chase on ITV. And Bradley Walsh asked the question, in what year was Sean's Bar founded? And the multiple choice answers were 1300, 1100 or 900. Do you know the answer yourself without checking? Now, this is a story that perhaps you can draw some learning from, especially if you're in business. The idea of cutting back on bills is always very tempting, but perhaps the more compelling reason to take on some of these initiatives is they are sustainable, and for the sake of the planet and our future generations, we need to be thinking this way. And Brendan Dooley of The Factory in Birr has, from the word go, always had sustainability in his mind. Good morning, Brendan.
Yeah, good morning, Brendan.
So what was your philosophy setting up The Factory when you considered sustainability, the environment, green practices? Why was that important?
Yes, well, it has been a learning experience. Family were involved in forestry, and that brought us into contact with various organisations and research centres in Scandinavia, where sustainability was really discussed openly and a lot, and was, I suppose, the fact that Scandinavian countries have a lot of forests and timber is a sustainable resource. So they were focusing on that, perhaps from a business point of view, I suspect, originally. But having been in contact with them, we kind of learned a lot about sustainability. And it wasn't very much on the agenda here and wasn't discussed very much. So when we started the factory, the print factory then in 2000, we, you know, felt that we needed to do things maybe a little differently and try and develop a sustainable business from the start.
Mm. Was this financially motivated or was there a higher purpose?
Well, I'm not sure. I suppose partially financially motivated for sure, as any business that isn't... you know, can it be financially successful, won't survive. But also, yes, from what we learned, as I say, from Scandinavian countries in particular, we felt there was a real, in fact, then I would say even urgent need for us to pursue sustainable practices in business and in life generally.
Now, 2018, the picture changes a little bit because Lisa comes into the business. Lisa, good morning.
Morning.
What was your influence on the direction of the company?
Well, I studied design, so the factory started off as a print factory, so it primarily focused on print. And whenever I joined the business, it had already gone naturally down the design route. And as Dad was saying, there already was like a thread of sustainability in everything we do, but the story wasn't really shared. So I thought it would be an amazing opportunity, and thankfully dad and mum were really, really open to my ideas and working together and collaborating. So we rebranded to become The Factory, and then we really started to, we made an action plan, I think, in 2018 of how could we tick off as many sustainable boxes as possible and then also share the story. So I suppose the mission changed in terms of trying to be as sustainable as possible to trying to influence others. So sharing the story was a really, really big picture because we could only do so much ourselves. So if we can show that it is possible, and not only possible, but it's like a win-win situation, it's way more purposeful to be in a business like this. It's way more obviously good for the planet. And then it gives us a unique selling point in a sense at this stage. Hopefully it won't always be the case, that it won't be
it'll be more commonplace. Yes, but you're in workplaces across the Midlands right now. So those boxes that you ticked, what were they? What could others consider?
Sure. So I suppose a big part of it was generating our own energy. And Dad is a very techie kind of person, so he did a lot of calculations to figure out what we could achieve within our means. We obviously had to borrow a lot, but we kind of said to ourselves that the biggest risk is not to go down the sustainability path, because ultimately, if you're not sustainable, the business will inevitably fail. So it just made a lot of sense from a moral perspective, a long-term business perspective.
What did you install?
Go ahead.
Yes, so we have about 24 kilowatts of solar on the building roof, and we also installed a small wind turbine, a 2.6 kilowatt wind turbine, and then we have batteries in the building to store that electricity.
Now, you mentioned the number crunching, and any business will try and figure out return on investment. Yes. What are you looking at?
So in our case, initially, it was approximately 10 years. But in after that 10 years, there would be very little maintenance, so we would have free electricity for a time. But in fact, since electricity prices have gone up so much recently, that the payback time now is much shorter. But probably also important is that it gives us insurance, again, fluctuating energy prices. At least we know fairly certainly what our average price will be over the next 10 years. And the other thing is, if there are power cuts, then we obviously have our own batteries, so the business can continue in operation.
Yeah, and we have had a few blackouts in the past year or so, and we've been able to stay going, which we wouldn't have been able to before. So that's fantastic.
So energy generation was one box. What other box did you take?
So we have about 5 acres of land surrounding the factory. So we're in a very fortunate situation that we do have a bit of land, and originally it was being rented to local farmers for livestock, but we decided that we would take it back for ourselves and start managing it for biodiversity. So we have sort of let things rewild, but we've also strategically planted native trees and wildflowers, and then we also have a barn owl box, about 5 beehives, and currently we're looking after a couple of pigs for my cousin, our neighbour, who has a social farm.
And these are Boris and Elvis?
Yes. Well, yeah. It's actually Boris. It's
Excuse me. Yeah. Boris
yes.
And Elvis. And you obviously need to feed them, look after them. This is part of the day-to-day duties, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I suppose it's improving the organic content of the soil in that area where we will be growing vegetables in the future, recycling food waste and that. Yeah, and they're very clean animals in spite of what you might think, and very friendly and very intelligent. It's great to have them. Yeah.
So different feathers to your bow. It's not just a print business anymore then.
Yeah, I feel like there is, I suppose we're trying to run it as holistically as possible, and sustainability, you have to look after people, planet and profit. And then I should also mention that we have an amazing team with us, and we try to get all of them on board and come along for the ride and give their ideas, and they will, I suppose, develop our vision, make it better than we could even dream of ourselves. So we're really lucky with the people that we have on our team. And we also have incorporated a 4-day work week and offer yoga classes to the team to have a better work-life balance and more stress-free kind of approach to working.
I can imagine many employers cynically wondering whether that produces a return on investment. Again, you're the number cruncher. Have you measured productivity on the 4-day week versus 5?
Yeah, it definitely is. It has improved for sure. I remember when Lisa was younger, she wondered why the fun part of the week was always the short part. So now the fun part of the week is one day longer for the team. And yeah, I think they're more refreshed. And as Lisa said, they really are pursuing the mission with us. Like, it is a team effort. It's really very good for business. Another thing I would say is that the fact that we're closed that extra day, then we don't have overheads like heating, very little electricity. So yeah, there are pluses.
Are there downsides, though? If a client is looking for you on the extra day that you're closed, do you lose business?
That is for sure the downside. So we notice sometimes cars arrive, like, and there's nobody there on the Monday. Our house is obviously nearby, so we can see people. But like, over a period, they will adapt to it. And I would say a part of a bigger picture is that ultimately AI and robotics are developing. Artificial general intelligence, like, is moving quite rapidly down the road. So shorter working weeks are on the horizon at any rate.
Now, you're in the print business, which involves paper, which involves trees. How do you reconcile that with your sustainable values?
Yeah, so a very large percentage of our paper now is recycled. In Europe at the moment, of all the recycled paper that's collected, there aren't enough recycling mills, and even that paper is exported outside of Europe for further recycling potentially. So recycled paper is 50% less energy approximately and 50% less water. Water is a huge issue for paper manufacturing. About 99% of what goes into making paper is water. Typically that's collected, filtered and reused. So paper and packaging, that whole industry has a huge energy demand, but if we can go down the recycled route, obviously that's halved. So recycled paper is a very important part of our business. But we also offer a product from sustainably managed forests as well.
So here we are in 2022. If we project ahead, you're back in here in 10 years' time. What does the conversation sound like? What will you have achieved by then?
Well, I think the first goal is we want to be 100% energy self-sufficient. So at the moment, we're producing about 65% of our energy needs. So in the summertime, we obviously have excess that goes out to the grid. And then in the wintertime, if to be 100%, we're going to have a bigger turbine we're going to need, and we're going to install more solar. So that's the short-term goal. And another, I guess, fairly short-term goal is we're currently developing the eco skill. So this is an educational aspect to the business, and the factory will act as an example business. So to show people it is possible, it is achievable, and we can do it in quite a short time. Like, we've made the majority of the bigger changes in the last 3 years. So it is doable.
Yeah, I suppose the other things we've done, just to mention briefly, is we have a rainwater harvesting system. We have air-to-water heating and all LED lighting, just to mention that in passing. So they all also save on energy. So there are no fossil fuels consumed directly by the business.
And again, so 10 years' time, you want to be fully energy sufficient. Any other goals, any other dreams, ambitions?
Well, hopefully with the EcoSkill, we'll be able to hold sustainability conferences or like events, and get in just to be like a sustainability hub, I suppose, is the big dream. But it's at very early days in developing the courses. So it's exciting, though. So looking forward.
And when you look at the bottom line, and considering all the money you've put in to install, and it's an upfront cost, many of these initiatives, are you satisfied that the bottom line is healthier having done this?
Yes, absolutely. As Lisa said earlier, it's perhaps a little bit unfortunate, but being a sustainable business at the moment is somewhat unique, which of course every business needs to be sustainable. And the market for sustainable products and services is growing exponentially at the moment. So we have customers from like all over Ireland who they themselves want to pursue sustainability. So their obviously carbon footprint is less by purchasing products and services that are sustainably produced. So yes, that has given the business a real boost for
sure.
I probably should mention briefly that our bank is EIB, who have been really helpful to us, but they provided some of the funding, but we did kind of stretch the elastic a little bit too far, and for some of that funding they directed us and they helped us with sourcing that from the Strategic Banking Corporation of Ireland. And without their help, we probably couldn't have achieved what we have so far. But it is an ongoing journey. We have a lot more to do, as Lisa says.
It's a brilliant story. And thank you so much for sharing it with us. Brendan Dooley and Lisa Dooley of The Factory, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks,
the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Jerry Lee Lewis, has died and will be laid to rest on Saturday. And he's known as much for his music as for his controversial private life. I think it says a lot that he is survived by his seventh wife. Yes, seventh wife, Judith Coughlin Lewis, and various children. But he is remembered by one man here in the Midlands for a very different reason, for his love of cars. Owen Reddy of readytodrive.ie. Good morning.
Good morning, Will. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Take us back to the mid-1990s.
Yeah, I got a call in the mid-90s from a very good friend of mine called Kieran Kavanagh, who's currently Daniel O'Donnell's manager. He wasn't at the time, but Kieran called me and said, you know, he was looking for a Mercedes, a couple of years old, and it would have to be automatic. And I told him, yeah, we have a 190 exclusive automatic in white, which was very rare back then. Not like today, the white cars weren't very common. So he said, yeah, how much is it, Owen? So I told him how much it was, and he said, that's fine. He said, I'll come back to you. So it came back to me. And the following day, I delivered the car to Jerry Lee Lewis.
And were you expecting that?
Nothing would have surprised me with Kieran, because Kieran was bringing a lot of artists into Ireland at the time. You know, he was touring Tammy Wynette and George Jones, all these people. So nothing would have surprised me with Kieran. And I was very, very friendly with Kieran. You know, like, I had got to sort of meet Johnny Cash and some other people through Kieran when he had toured, because I loved the music. It was my out from my normal work. So nothing would have surprised me. So in one way I was surprised, in another I wasn't.
And did you get to talk to the man himself, or was it a case of drop and go?
Yeah. Well, I met him quite a number of times, actually. He was very nice, very pleasant man, but his wife at the time was called Kerry Ann, and she kind of stood out for another reason. She was quite difficult, quite difficult.
Okay. Let's talk maybe about some of the other celebrity customers you've had, and many famous faces over the years. The late Ronnie Drew springs to mind.
Yeah. Well, it kind of happened by accident. I worked in London in a jazz pub years ago when I was only a late teenager. And one of the clients that came in there was Ralph McTell, the writer of...
Oh, Streets of London, yes.
So I got to know Ralph quite well. And after a couple of years, I left and I came back here to work. And Ralph called me and he said, I have a client who wants to buy a vehicle. I'm going to send them to you. And the person he sent to me was Jim McCann. So that was the very first celebrity I ever sold a car to, was actually Jim McCann. And of course, Jim introduced me to the Dubliners, and the Dubliners introduced me to the Dublin City Ramblers, and on to the Barleycorn, and right through the whole sphere of music then, you know.
Any other famous faces? Or do you have to maintain secrecy?
Well, not really, but I mean, a lot of them would be the Irish entertainment scene. I would have, you know, I suppose quite a few of mine now are either retired or passed on, but, you know, I would have dealt with, you know, all the people like the Patsy Watchhorns of the world and all these people who are in entertainment for a long, long time. Obviously, Daniel as well. I spied Daniel's first car in 1988.
And do they all tend to want the same sort of premium, flash, sporty luxury, or do they surprise you from time to time?
They're very varied. You know, there's some people would be very conservative, you know. There would be some people obviously would like the top end cars. Ronnie Drew, for example, always, even though I'm sure he could have afforded top end Mercedes, he always wanted the Nissan.
Oh, the Nissan Maxima, yes.
And he would have had three or four Nissan Maximas. And, you know, he just loved those cars. So it was quite varied, you know, lots of different people. And, you know, we had some very sad ones as well. I supplied a sports car to a man called the late Spider Simpson, who was a real up-and-coming pop star. Now, where I wasn't mad into pop music, I did go to see him, and I thought what he did, he was brilliant at. You know, and I had lunch with him one day, and literally a couple of days later, he was in a horrific accident.
Oh, That makes it all the more poignant, all right.
Yeah, so it can be, there's the sad end of it as well.
Anyway, on this day, we remember the late Jerry Lee Lewis. Owen Reddy of readytodrive.com. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you indeed.
Now, you can find him in Monaster Evan, by the way, as well as online. Still to come today, Mark McSharry has resigned from Fianna Fáil, just weeks after his readmission to the party was put forward by, among others, Barry Cowan, the Laois Offaly TD. The words of the year: permacrisis, partygate, quiet quitting, all being included in this year's Collins Dictionary. And Brian Clunan does DIY from 20 past 10 as well. And you have a chance to win some lingerie as well. More details after the news. Midlands 103. Still to come today, the man who has completed 600 marathons. I mean, do the maths on that. 600. That would be, if you did one a week, 12 years non-stop. One a week. So how did he achieve this? How does he feel? How's the body afterwards? That's coming up after 11. The words of the year: permacrisis, partygate, quiet quitting. What do they all mean? And Leinster Council Chairman Pat Tehan is in the race to be the next president of the GAA. We'll look at what his offering will be. When you call, 0818 300 103 is my number. You can text, you can WhatsApp, 083 3010 103. An unusual prize this week, with thanks to the award-winning lingerie department at Goods of Kilkenny, goods.ie. You can win €25 to spend there, but also be in the chance of winning a rather nice lingerie set on Friday. More details to come a little later. Now, the Irish Christmas turkey is under threat from a new virus, declared the morning papers. And the Irish Farmers Association last night put out a red alert to poultry producers. Let's get the detail on this, because it does refer to something serious. It's the HPA1, H5N1 strain of avian flu. And Tim Cullinan is president of the IFA. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
So I understand there was a test on Monday that confirmed this. What detail can you give us?
Yeah, my understanding as well, Will, is that there was a bird or a swan found in a lake in Cavan, and the department tested this bird, and you're right, came up with this strain, HPA1, another strain of the bird flu. And obviously, you know, this strain has been creating problems, in particular in Europe and also in the UK. And it is the first bird that has been found here with this strain. So obviously, a lot of concern by the department. And the department have been monitoring or assessing the situation over the last number of days. And the minister has just made a statement there this morning where he'll be asking flock owners to keep their birds indoors from next Monday on. So it's a precautionary measure to ensure that this strain would not take hold in the flock here in Ireland. And look, you're right, and we're coming up to the Christmas period, and for people with turkeys, obviously that's a very, very important market. It's a once-a-year market, and it's important that those turkeys now are protected in the run-up to Christmas, which they can be. And I'd have to say, like, the poultry sector, both, whether it's layers or boilers or turkeys, growers, they have excellent systems in place, excellent biosecurity, who to work in conjunction with the regulations that the department would have around biosecurity. And it's important everybody would adhere to those measures in the coming weeks now, obviously. And I suppose, looking out at the weather this morning, it's probably not the worst time that birds would be indoors. I would imagine they would stay indoors themselves this morning anyway, Will.
Indeed. But not to underestimate the risk here. In the UK, 2.3 million turkeys were culled last month because of this virus. 50 million birds in the US. They have their Thanksgiving holiday in November, nearly bigger than Christmas. So they're in a bit of bother there. We may be just fortunate that the timing, as you say, brings birds indoors naturally.
It does. And I suppose what's important, equally important as well, is that not to allow anybody onto the farm unless, you know, it's essential services, you know, and that the proper biosecurity protocols would be adhered to as well, you know, proper protective clothing, footwear, because, you know, there is a risk that people could carry this as well, you know, if they happen to be in contact with a contaminated bird. So from that point of view, so there's precautions that farmers or flock owners can take, and, you know, once they adhere to those precautions, hopefully, you're right, we're in the run-up to Christmas now, and hopefully we can get there without any disruption to the turkey trade for this Christmas.
All right, we'll keep monitoring developments, as will the IFA. Tim Cullinan, thank you very much for your time.
That's all. Thank you, Will.
083 30 10 103, text and WhatsApp. Lots of comments on different issues that we've discussed so far this morning. For instance, Carl Vorderman, ex-Countdown presenter, her advice on saving energy, insulate, insulate, insulate. She barely has an energy bill herself. Hilda in Shinrone says, that's great advice. Now all you need is the money, the material, the tradespeople. Minor details, really, says Hilda. Thank you very much. And Teresa, on the discussion about new bank accounts and so many people yet to switch from Ulster Bank and KBC, despite both pulling out of the Irish market, she says, I had my own account with Bank of Ireland since the 1980s. And when we closed down our Ulster Bank account 3 months ago, I presumed I would have no problem adding my husband to my account. But they said, no, you have to open a joint account. But you can still keep your old one. And she asks, how crazy is that? The brains department not in use. Ah, I beg to differ there, Teresa. The money department is very much in use because now you have to pay fees on not one but two accounts. And if they were just compliant and said, no problem, let's put the hubby on, sure they wouldn't be getting those extra fees, would they? James, you are leading the charge among many, to correctly point out, Sean's Bar in Athlone, 900 years old. Sorry, 900 was the year in which it was established. So that makes it 1,200 years old, nearly. And that is... That's terrible maths, isn't it? Yeah, no. It is actually 1,100 years old. You can tell who is doing the accounts in Midlands 103. It's not me. Anyway, it was On the Chase with Bradley Walsh yesterday, a very popular programme on ITV. And this is the moment the question came up.
You've put 1,100, I reckon 900, for some peculiar reason. Correct answer is 900, see?
Right.
Yeah. Chase's put, here he goes. He'll either go 13 or 9. Yeah, 9 all day long.
The Irish do like their ale. I mean, look at the Guinness Brewery in Dublin, 1759.
Yeah.
And is it a 9,000-year lease they've got on the place?
Yeah, exactly.
They plan ahead.
So, famous, as if it wasn't already, Sean's Bar featuring On the Chase. Will, good morning. I'm a healthcare worker and a damn good one, says Bernadette. I have tested positive for COVID for the third time. And I contacted my own GP by phone. He emailed me a script for steroids so I could gargle and hopefully restore the voice in my throat. I spoke to him 2 weeks later because there was no improvement, and he pushed for me to go to the emergency department in Portlaoise, but I didn't want to go. Emergency department is for emergencies only, in my view. So over the phone, I was prescribed inhalers and more steroids, which I proceeded to take. And I ended up on Sunday evening with Midoc. Do you say Midoc or Midoc? I can never tell. Anyway, she says she was diagnosed with pneumonia and given antibiotics. So today, 2nd of November, finally feeling human again. I received €208 in sick pay. I worked through the pandemic. And this is my thanks. I'm an agency worker for 8 years in hospitals. I never received the €1,000 bonus payment. So could you please tell me why I would go back and risk infection for nothing? No bonus, no fuel allowance, no double payment, not one extra cent, says a very unimpressed Bernadette.
And now, with thanks to Aramount Furniture, Clancolig Tullamore. Quality furniture for every room at the right price with free delivery. Find Aramount Furniture Tullamore on Facebook. With November comes chills and extra big bills. But here's the man who gives you a DIY thrill. He's our screwdriver MacGyver, Brian Clunan.
Is that you?
That's me.
I didn't recognise you with your clothes on.
Ah, feck off. You must have drugged me when you got me to agree to that.
Oh, come on.
I just don't know.
If you were in Tullamore last Friday, we were at the new Esker Arts Centre.
Yes.
Which is coming along very, very nicely.
Yeah, it is actually. It looks really well.
And the Lions.
I was well impressed by it.
The Lions Club, of which you are a member.
Yes.
Asked for a fundraiser launch. Which
yes.
we supplied. The brief from John Lyons was, do something that will get people talking.
Yes.
And we did.
Yes.
And the video footage is available. Just look at the Midlands 103 Facebook page. I would have liked more time.
I'm here
to
answer DIY questions.
Yeah. I would have liked more time to go to the gym myself, would you?
No, you painted on a six-pack and some people fell for it. He painted himself with a six-pack and some people thought it was for real.
Moving on. So we have three 4-inch brass hinges on our front door. But the hinges are very worn, which is causing the door to sag on one side. So they need to be replaced. Now, we've tried everywhere in Westmeath that I can think of, but they tell me they're not available anymore. I'm quite handy, and I would have no problem in replacing hinges with the same type. But I'm not sure if I'm competent enough to change to the modern ball race hinges. My wife says, you know everything. Have you any words of wisdom?
Good girl, wife. She's right. No, she's not. So where do we start? The old 4-inch. So if you had a house built any time in, you know, in the 70s, the 80s, 60s, 70s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, your front door generally had, exterior doors generally had 4-inch brass butt hinges on them. And they have a steel washer in the middle. And of course, the brass is quite a soft metal and the steel is a hard metal. And when you rub continually a hard metal against the soft metal gives way. And the door sags, it goes down on one side. So it's now, if you look at your door and it's hinged on the right, the bottom left-hand side will nearly be rubbing off the door saddle and it'll continue and it'll get worse and eventually they have to be replaced. So you can actually still get the traditional 4-inch brass hinges, but they have become very expensive. So a lot of places don't stock them. Now, my own policy on these things in our shop would be keep one pair and say, look, I have them, but you shouldn't use those. You should use these. And then people go, all right. As opposed to saying, you know, if I have something that I feel is better, I'll try and keep the bad one as well if people are coming in looking for it. So rather than saying, no, I don't sell Pepsi, I do the reverse.
Oh, great. Okay. Here comes the lawsuit.
No,
right?
I don't sell this one. I sell this one. But if you have the one that the people are looking for, but you feel you have a better item, it's always better to have the two there. So you can still get stainless steel or you can still get brass butt hinges. You will get them if you keep looking. But why would you replace it with the one? This is we hardware shops and builders providers all over the country would be having this conversation every week with people who want to get the 4-inch brass butt hinges because that's what's there. So even if you get the 4-inch brass butt hinge, it won't be the very same as what you have because it'll be a different brand, a different manufacturer, and the screw holes won't line up. So it's not going to be identical anyway. And he says he's handy. It's not a huge job to switch over to the ball race. He's obviously gotten the information from asking in the builders providers of the hardware shops. So a ball race hinge, the only difference really is it has a big barrel that's more visible on the outside. So when you look at, if you stand on, say, the inside of your front door, you'll have three hinges or whatever number of hinges you have. And if you have an old brass butt hinge, there's a thin barrel. If you have a modern hinge, it has a thicker barrel. And it's that thicker barrel that lasts much longer, stays flowing more freely, because it doesn't, it's all made of stainless steel. It might have a coating on it. So ideally what you're looking for is a stainless steel hinge with a brass coating, unless you're changing your door fittings. Nowadays, a lot of people have changed. So the stainless steel is what you're looking for, whether it's coated or not. And it's not a huge job. If you can use a wood chisel, it's a little bit of chiseling. It's not a huge amount of chiseling. Now, the one thing I'll say to everyone is that if you look at an old front door with three brass 4-inch hinges on it, 100mm hinges, 4-inch that would have been back in the day when they were fitted, they always put one at the top, one at the bottom, and one in the middle. There's no logic to the one in the middle.
Why?
It's not supporting any weight. All the weight is at the top, which is why the door sags over. So if you look at any modern heavy door, there'll be two hinges at the top and one at the bottom.
Gotcha.
So right at the top.
The bottom is really a guidance, is it?
Correct. Correct. All the weight is at the top. So they put two hinges at the top. Now say, actually, yeah, our own front door and our own shop is there, you know, 50 years. And it had the three brass butt hinges on it. So top, middle, bottom. So we needed to replace them because this is a number of years ago, probably 10 years ago, we needed to replace them. And we put in the ball race hinges. But the one in the middle, it didn't have to be replaced, but it looked wrong if it wasn't replaced because it was all chiseled out. So we have four hinges on the front door, two at the top, which are working, as in doing the work.
Yes.
One at the bottom, which is keeping, as you say, a guidance. It's keeping it supported. And the one in the middle,
decorative,
which is purely aesthetic, really. Yeah. It's just rather than leave, you know, a chiseled out gap full of holes, or trying to fill it, which you never fill it properly, really, unless you're really good with filler or timber.
Tommy says he has seen the 4-inch brass hinges in pound shops.
Yeah, but the problem, well, just I'd be saying to you, if the ones that were there are worn, they are very often the ones you'll see in the pound shops or whatever will be a brass hinge with a brass coated. And they're not really suitable for outside doors. They're fine for inside doors, but not for outside doors. No, the way to go on a heavy front door is a ball race hinge.
A little earlier, we were talking about the public service tenders that are up at the moment.
Okay.
You can supply cheese to the Gartha College in Temple Moor, for instance.
All right.
You can supply a chatbot to Sullis, formerly known as Foss.
Yes.
That has to be gracious and simulate a human interaction. Or you can supply water dispensers across the public service. And Sinead has sent a message asking, why does the public service need water dispensers? Can they not use the normal tap? And besides, are civil servants not only in the office 2 days a week these days? As they say in the Leaving Cert, discuss. Brian Clunan is here from Clunan's Hardware in Tullamore until 11. After 11, a man who has completed his 600th marathon.
Oh my God.
Do the maths.
Wow.
600 marathons. Where does he get the time?
Well, obviously, I'm going to have to do the maths because I heard your maths being demonstrated earlier and it was pretty appalling. I hope you're not the one that helps the kids with their maths homework.
That's live radio,
it was
all right.
Really, really basic maths and he struggled. Did you get it wrong twice or how many times did you get it wrong?
Listen, Mr. Muscle. Go eat some spinach pot pie, all right?
Now, Mick has a drip, and he's not talking about you and me. He says there's a constant drip coming from the pipe above the range, and only in the last few days. It's leaving a black stain on the range, and the black stain is very hard to remove. We are in the house for more than 20 years and never had this problem before. So two questions. One, how do I stop the drip? Two, how do I remove the stain?
Right, so it's black. So it's probably, when he says the pipe, he probably means the flue pipe above the rain. Yeah, yeah, that's it. Okay, so we've had horrendous rain. And it's all, if it's, look, had he a Chinese hat on the chimney? Is the Chinese hat gone? You know, we stopped looking after a while. So it could well be in the horrendous winds that we had, that particularly if it was a steel one, it could have just rusted away and it could be, you know, half a mile away, it could be buried in the neighbour's front window or whatever. So had you a Chinese hat? Is it gone? Did you ever have a Chinese hat? You would imagine if you had, it would have been a problem before now. Mm. But then the other
although
part,
sometimes you can have tree growth which changes wind directions.
Yeah, funnels,
things water
vary
down the chimney. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say to you, go outside. Well, don't go outside this minute because it's torrential out there. But go out and have a quick look.
Is.
Yeah, go out and have a quick look and see. You know, had you a Chinese hat and is it gone? I would say that's the most likely problem, is just water coming into the chimney. In my opinion, every chimney, unless you're going, so we would have had this when he mentions 20 years ago, we would have people in and they'd say in the shop and they'd be saying, you know, we've water coming into the chimney. And I wouldn't mind, like, parents, it was my parents' house before we moved in, and like they never had a problem. But the reason was the parents had the range going all winter long. You know, practically 300. It heated the water. So it was going all the time, which meant the chimney was drying out because of the heat. But now, you know, so when Mammy and Daddy were there, the range never went out. When, you know, Mary and Jim moved in, they're both working and they arrive home in the evening at 6 o'clock and they put on a fire. But it's only going from 6 to 11. And of course, that makes a huge difference. It's not drying out the chimney as much. So that could be a factor as well. But I suppose, look, the first question was what to do. Put on a Chinese hat and stop the rain coming in. Don't do it in a day like today, obviously. Or get someone to do it. Make sure, you know, it's done by somebody who knows what they're doing.
And is insured if they're getting on your roof.
Correct. If you're paying someone to do it or you're getting someone to do it, you make sure that they're covered by their insurance. Make sure they use a stainless steel one. So try and definitely don't use a steel one. Use a stainless steel one or aluminium, but stainless steel will last longer. So stainless steel is much better for the heat. It won't break down aluminium is non-rust, but it will still break down with the heat eventually. Mm. Whereas stainless steel practically lasts forever. That's a bit strong, but it lasts a long, long time. That was question one. What was question two?
Removing the stain.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, sorry. And the other thing just to say, I suppose you'll have to dry out the chimney. So put in... it's all about getting the heat up the chimney. So maybe buy yourself a bag of coal and use whatever you normally use, but put in a small amount of coal as well and leave the damper open as much as you can. I mean, ideally, you'd even leave the fire door open if it's not smoking to get the heat up the chimney as much as you can. You need to dry out the chimney as much as you can. Put in some blue spot or hot blue stone or hot spot or comate, one of those things that help dry out the chimney. They make a huge difference. And in terms of cleaning the tar off the top of it, I would use an oven cleaner. So usually the spray-on oven cleaner is enough. Just spray it on, give it about... not when the range has to be cold. Spray it on, give it about 10 minutes and then give it a scrub and wipe it off. If that's not enough, spray on loads and cover it in cling film, or better still, get the gel-type oven cleaner. Brush that on, leave it for a couple of hours, cover it in cling film and leave it for a couple of hours, and it'll definitely get it all off without any problem. But you need to dry out, you need to get that chimney as dried out as you can.
Chris asks if Chinese hats are expensive. Say the stainless steel.
Stainless steel ones, 30, 35 euro. Aluminium ones, 30 and 35. So that extra little bit of a difference, you know, makes a difference. The steel ones are about 25. So to me, there's just no comparison. Yeah, particularly if you're paying someone to go up there to do it, put up the one that's going to last long. Yeah, yeah. There's also a health and safety thing, genuinely, because the problem with them is that with the steel one, what happens is the steel one is normally, you're familiar with the jackdaw guards. That's the pointed thing that goes down to keep the birds out. So the steel version has a cap on top of that. But the problem is heat and rain, heat and rain, it ends up corroding away. And the jackdaw guard stays in place, but this steel flying saucer then leaves on a windy night. Mm. And that's not a good idea. Like, you'd never know where that's going to land. So you can imagine someone driving along and this thing hits the windscreen.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So to me, it's just a no-brainer. Just don't get the steel one. Get the stainless steel one. It will be, like a lot of these things, slightly dearer at the beginning, but much cheaper in the long run.
All right. A caller, by the way, is advising that there are many roads very, very wet, risk of aquaplaning or hydroplaning, regardless of tyre conditions. So please slow down. They've seen a number of motorists ignore the conditions. Next query. Can you paint lockers without putting on a primer first using Colour Trend?
So... Colour Trend is just a brand like every other brand. So most of them will require, most paints will require a primer. Now, if you're going to go for the primer, and if you're just doing two lockers, it's probably as cheap really to get a primer and a finish. If you're painting them white, that's very straightforward. If you're painting them a colour, make sure and get the primer tinted to the colour that you're going to use. And then you'll probably get away with one coat of primer and one coat of satin. Don't go for gloss, go for satin. It'll look better, last longer, and it'll hide any bad workmanship. Alternatively, you go for something like Superdeck, which is a primer and finish in its own right. It's six of one, half a dozen of the other, really. I suppose you probably wouldn't get away. You'll probably need three coats if you use a primer. One coat of primer and two coats of the finish, where you'll probably get away with two coats if you use the Superdeck or something like it.